reached out and heaven sent. Reached out and heaven sent down. Oh, angel of mine.
When my old teacher began to question us as to what we intended to do and be in life, I said, I want to be a musician. Said music would bring me to the gutter. Musicians were idlers, dissipated characters. He wrote my father a note which, when he read, he said, Sonny, I'd rather follow you to your grave than to see you be a musician.
He loved music from the first. And even though it was prohibited at home, when he saw a guitar in a store window, he worked, picking berries and making lye soap to get the money to buy it. When the day came, he bought the guitar and brought it home to face his fundamentalist father. Whatever possessed you to bring a sinful thing like that into our Christian home? He made W.C. Handy swap that sinful thing for a dictionary and sent him off to learn a decent instrument, the organ. Well, the music wasn't quashed, and perhaps the dictionary even did some good, because Handy would write some of the most durable lyrics and one of the best remembered melodies in American music. From Artemis Media Project, Murray Street Productions, and Public Radio International, this is W.C. Handy's Blues. I'm Izai Maria Barnwell.
My old teacher told me once that I have a good memory. And when I was a youngster in school, we studied music by the old tonic solfa system, do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do. And in that way, I could notice the peculiarities of music.
I'm going away there, sailing across the yard.
These things that we call folk music, I noticed it then and kept it in mind.
W.C. Handy didn't invent the blues, but he heard them in a deep and understanding way. He figured out how they worked. He wrote them down, arranged them, and did the business of bringing them to the world.
I hate to see that evening sun go down.
That gal I love, she wouldn't have gone so far. Come here,
I got them things, Louis Blue, yes, that's new as I can be.
That gal got a heart like a rock cast in the sea.
Or else he wouldn't have gone so far from me.
I had a feeling, you know, that it would just work its way into the people's hearts.
Since St. Louis Blues was published in 1914, it has been played in arrangements ranging from Hawaiian steel guitar to full orchestra and sung by everyone from down-and-out street singers to Hollywood legends. The man behind it, William Christopher Handy would become known as the father of the blues for bringing the blues idiom to popularity and respect around the world. What is the blues?
Blues music is a dialogue with life. Things happen. You don't cry about them, you sing about them. And when someone is singing the blues, there's always a lot of space left for an instrument to respond.
Jazz at Lincoln Center Artistic Director Wynton Marsalis.
The blues has three sections of four bars. Each section features one vocal stanza. Generally, the words pose some type of problem.
Memphis historian Richard Rachelson.
What really makes blues a blues is the use of minor chords like minor thirds or minor sevenths and anything in between the major and minor that gives you that blue effect.
Blues was a melding together of the work songs that were sung by field hands, railroad gangs, fellows that worked as longshoremen or worked on steamboats.
Musicologist Elliot Hurwit.
Building blocks for blues would include things like the bad man ballads that were popular in the 1890s, songs like Stagger Lee. Talking about mostly murder ballads and ballads having to do with lowlife. Often these stories, like the Stagger Lee story, Frankie and Johnny story, are about real people.
The blues were conceived in aching hearts. That was how W.C. Handy would describe the music in his autobiography, Father of the Blues. But he might have been feeling something different the first time he heard it.
He tells a wonderful story on himself, which is very revealing in his autobiography.
From the Institute of Jazz Studies at Rutgers University, Dan Morgenstern.
He says, "My own enlightenment came in Cleveland, Mississippi. I was leading the orchestra in a dance program when somebody sent up an odd request. Would we object if a local collard band played a few dances? Three guys came in. Their band consisted of a battered guitar, a mandolin, and a worn-out bass.
I've been home about 4 o'clock. Knocked on the door and found the knock.
The music they played, it was an over-and-over strain that didn't seem to have a very clear beginning and no ending. But, he says, all through it, there was a little agonizing strain that was not really annoying or unpleasant, perhaps haunting. He just wondered whether anybody besides small-town rounders and their running mates would go for it. The answer was not long in coming. A rain of silver dollars began to fall around the outlandish stomping feet. The dancers went wild. There before the boys lay more money than my 9 musicians were being paid for the entire engagement. Then I saw the beauty of primitive music."
Handy had been touring with his brass ensemble through the Mississippi Delta, playing a mix of popular ragtime and minstrel songs. They played wherever there was work, picnics, weddings, dances of all sorts, including some of the livelier gatherings in the red light district of Clarksdale, Mississippi.
As I was come from Tennessee, my horse got far up to his knee. I whipped him till I see the blood, then he hauled me out of the mud.
It was just what his father had feared. W.C. Handy was born in 1873 in Florence, Alabama, into a religious family who taught that any music other than church music was the work of the devil.
My father was an African Methodist minister, and he was against my study of music. Only he did pay for organ lessons for me to play, not a pipe organ, but one of the old Estee church organ. But he didn't want me playing in a band.
Though his family wouldn't have approved, Handy found music everywhere, In the 1880s, he would have heard all sorts of music around his Alabama home.
Oh, I think I heard
work songs. Minstrel songs. Ballads.
I'm just a poor wayfaring stranger.
And even the roots of the blues.
Ain't gonna work in the country and he don't forest his farm. I'm gonna stay and tell my maid they'll come and she gonna call me song.
By the time he was 10, he could tell the musical notes of bird songs and steamboat whistles on the Tennessee River. Handy's indiscriminate love of music began getting him into trouble at an early age at the Florence District School for Negroes.
When my old teacher down in Florence, Alabama, called our class together, and instead of hearing our lessons, began to question us as to what we intended to do and be in life. Some wanted to be doctors, lawyers, teachers, merchants, and so forth. And when it came to me, I said, I want to be a musician. He read me a lecture, said music would bring me to the gutter. Musicians were idlers, dissipated characters. He wrote my father a note which, when he read, he said, Sonny, I'd rather follow you to your grave than to see you be a musician.
The only stridency in Handy's youth was the tension between him and his parents, the struggle between a traditional religious family and a young man enchanted with the sounds and experiences that the world had to offer. As a teenager, he secretly acquired a cornet from a stranded circus musician and took music lessons in a barbershop, and he began hanging around with Jim Turner, a talented violin player who had staggered into town from Memphis. His father would have been horrified to find his son spending time with this drunk. But Handy was enchanted by his tales of Beale Street and the glimmer of syncopation in his music. He absorbed it all, but he still wanted his father's approval. Handy graduated from school and set his sights on studying for the ministry. He began teaching in Birmingham, then found out that his pay, about a dollar a day, was less than that of a laborer. He quit and went to work in a steel mill. In his spare time, Handy organized a brass band and led a vocal quartet. People began calling him Professor. His college fund was growing, but economic clouds were gathering too. By the early 1890s, the depression that had spread over America rolled into Birmingham's steel industry, and Handy was laid off. But he heard the future calling, and he convinced his quartet to follow him to the Chicago World's Fair. Over several weeks, Handy and the Lozetta Quartet worked their way up the river to Illinois, only to find the fair had been postponed. They retreated to St. Louis, still unable to find work, they disbanded. The others drifted away. Handy found himself living out his old teacher's prophecy, sleeping on the cobblestones of the levee.
Oh, I was working on the levee bar, sleeping on the ground.
Music did bring me to the gutter. It brought me to sleep on the levee of the Mississippi River, on the cobblestones, broken, hungry. I could have returned to my hometown, Florence, but I decided on that levee to fight it out with two Handies. One that says, go back home and go to Wilberforce. And the other said, fight it out and stick to your music, which I did.
Despite his dire situation, Handy's determination helped him to get along. One night, hungry and broke, he stood outside a whites-only saloon, listening to the sad song of a man with a guitar.
Oh, I'm going away to a foreign land.
Against his better judgment, he let the music pull him inside. After a few tense moments, the bartender let him sing.
He come with 40 links of chain, oh, Lord.
after which the admiring bar crowd took up a collection for him. Handy never lost his faith in music. His luck finally changed when he hopped a freight train to Henderson, Kentucky. At a barbecue there, he met his future wife, Elizabeth Price, and arranged to join a local band. He'd arrived at that picnic a hobo. He left proudly as a professional musician. Handy and the band played popular favorites, including old folk tunes. He had heard this music all his life, but he began hearing it as a musician and a composer. In his autobiography, he compared the experience to getting religion.
Well, hello, fiddler, hello, I step.
The dove descended on my head just as it descended on those who got happy at camp meeting. The only difference was that instead of singing about the New Jerusalem, my dove began to moan about high brown women and the men they tied to their apron strings. He began collecting old songs to preserve them. Some of these would later be called the blues. Musicologist Elliot Hurwit.
It is probably an art form that came not so much from a geographical location, but from a cultural nexus that had to do with river culture and the interaction of working people who traveled and traded stories and songs.
In August 1896, Handy accepted an invitation to join a minstrel show. This was a bold decision. Polite black society had no use for the disreputable minstrels. But Handy knew that the best musicians of his day could be found in those shows. They entertained both white and black audiences. But for black musicians, this was the significant showbiz opportunity. The Mahara minstrels took Handy all over the United States and as far afield as Havana.
He and my grandmother, his wife, they actually went to Cuba, and this was in 1900.
Dr. Carlos Handy.
You know, my grandfather went through this intellectual evolution where he began to really appreciate the black songs, the blues, the slave songs, but also down in Cuba, he began to appreciate the importance of indigenous Afro-American, Afro-Cuban versions of the music.
His love for the tango came out of being able to tour Cuba.
W.C. Handy's great-granddaughter, Edwina Handy DaCosta.
He was intrigued by the melody and the melodic sounds.
When the minstrels finished their engagement in Cuba, they played North Alabama. In Huntsville, there was a special visitor at the show. Afterwards, Handy reported his father said, "Sonny, I haven't been in a show since I professed religion. I enjoyed it. I am very proud of you. I forgive you for becoming a musician." Back in his father's good graces and having recently become a father himself, Handy quit the minstrel show. He and Elizabeth intended to settle in Florence. For a while, it looked as if his old nickname of professor would become a permanent title. In 1900, he was hired to teach music at the Alabama Agricultural and Mechanical College for Negroes on the outskirts of Huntsville. The college president, W.H. Council, loved sacred music, but he believed strongly that European music was superior to American. After a year, Handy was growing tired of hearing American music dismissed, and he also realized that at $10 a week, he was never going to make a living as a college professor. When Mahara's minstrels offered him $50 a week to rejoin the troupe, that was the end of Handy's college career. But it was also the end of the minstrel era. Handy was with the show only one more year. In 1903, he received two job offers. One from a town in Michigan to direct its municipal band, and one from Clarksdale in the heart of the Mississippi Delta to direct the Colored Knights of Pythias Brass and Wind Ensemble. The Michigan offer was by far the best, but Handy agreed to move to Mississippi. Years later, he said, I turned my face southward and down the road that led inevitably to the blues. Historian Richard Rachelson says, a chance encounter in a railway station pointed Handy to the music that made him famous.
He hears a guitar player playing in a corner of the train station, playing this weird song that Handy was not familiar with. He said, what the heck? He walked over to him and just, wow, what is this stuff? And the guy was sliding a bottle on his finger, and he's sliding it up and down the frets. And he was singing with the Southern Cross, the Yellow Dog.
Later, Handy said, the effect was unforgettable. His song, too, struck me instantly, going where the Southern crossed the dog. The singer repeated the line three times, accompanying himself on the guitar with the weirdest music I ever heard. Handy was hearing the blues on their native soil, and now he was listening with the ear of a composer, an American composer. Around this time, Handy was traveling back and forth between the Mississippi Delta and Memphis. There, he got to know his way around Beale Avenue, back before it became a street. Beale was a haven for colorful characters, to say the least, from all over. They drank and danced in the lively bars they called barrel houses.
He knew classics and he knew folk level. And so when he came into Memphis in around 1907, 1908, he started hanging out in Pee Wee's. This was a black musicians' union. A lot of musicians there play pool, et cetera, et cetera. But if someone wanted to hire a band, you could call in and ask for a band leader. And usually they called in for Handy. He dressed well and presented himself well because he got a reputation of having good musicians, providing a good program. He became very, very welcome in the White Houses, which were mansions lining Van Street. So Handy was hired in these places, and he would get musicians from Pee Wee's. He had a closet back there, was packed with instruments and arrangements and et cetera, et cetera.
In 1909, into this high-rolling paradise came Mr. E.H. Crump, a reform candidate for mayor. He promised to close down all the barrel house bars. In an unlikely move, some of Crump's supporters hired Handy and his band to bring in votes. Handy composed a campaign song without words. Then, based on the crowd's reaction to Crump's planned reforms, he added these lyrics.
Well, Mr. Crump don't allow no easy riders, yeah. Mr. Crump don't allow no easy riders, yeah. We don't care what Mr. Crump don't allow. We go to Bell House anyhow. Mr. Crump won't allow it. Ain't gonna have it here.
The crowds went wild, and as Handy noted later, Mr. Crump would undoubtedly have gone wild himself had he ever heard the words. We don't care what Mr. Crump don't allow. We gonna barrel house anyhow. Mr. Crump can go and catch himself some air.
Well, we played that on the corner of Main and Madison, and it stopped the traffic. I put 67 musicians to work playing Mr. Crump.
Despite or because of Handy's sassy tune, Mr. Crump was elected. He never did close down the barrel houses or clean up Beale Street. Handy was enjoying increasing success as a leader, arranger, and writer. But his gift to American music would be to polish the weird, mournful music he'd heard all his life and give it Tin Pan Alley style.
I want to ride the yellow dog where they may reach. I sat deep in myself and I don't remember my name.
The public was not ready in the early part of the 20th century to take into their hearts that train station singer. It was too wild. You had to have it tamed.
Historian Richard Rachelson.
He was an entrepreneur in being able to take it from its original setting and put it together in a compositional form, which, of course, was his own way of composing, his own arrangements, and make it palatable to the rest of the world. So people in the USSR of old could take the Memphis blues and sheet music, put it on their piano, and play it.
Listening to W.C. Handy's Blues from Artemis Media Project and Murray Street Productions. I'm Izai Maria Barnwell. This is PRI, Public Radio International. W.C. Handy's time in the Delta exposed him to the melodramatic, sometimes tragic, stories of the area. Among the songs Handy heard was the larger-than-life tale of Joe Turner, who kidnapped black men into debt slavery.
Joe Turner was the brother of Pete Turner, governor of the state of Tennessee, who pressed Negroes into peonage and took them down the Mississippi River to the farms. Women looking for their husbands who were late coming home would ask, "I wonder where my husband is." Then they would be told, "Haven't you heard about Joe Turner? He's been here and gone." Joe Turner, he done come.
Well, the folk tune Joe Turner was the story of an evil man who kidnapped poor people. It wasn't the sort of thing mainstream America wanted to dance to. But Handy's genius lay in making the blues accessible. Handy collected that folk song, Joe Turner. Then he changed the story about a villain to an upbeat blues about leaving an unappreciative lover.
You never miss a battle till your well runs dry. Till your well runs dry.
Those lyrics made Joe Turner a standard, so durable that it was a hit more than 40 years later for Nat King Cole.
You never miss the water till your well runs dry. Till your well runs dry. You never miss Joe Turner till he says goodbye.
W.C. Handy's success as a songwriter is notable in itself. Taking the blues and folk tunes from rural roots music to popular acclaim was visionary. But more remarkable, Handy, the creator, arranger, and band leader, was one of the first black musicians to hold on to the rights to his music and publish it on his own.
Thank you.
W.C. Handy's first real hit was the campaign song he had written for E.H. Crump. It was played by almost every band in Memphis and became such a popular tune that he realized it would have a life after the election. Unable to find a publisher among the white-owned establishments, Handy took a partner, a banker and sometimes lyricist named Harry Pace. In 1912, they published his instrumental as the Memphis Blues. W.C. Handy's great-granddaughter, Edwina Handy DaCosta.
Times were so different that a man born 8 years after emancipation to two former slaves could not have his music published, which was another reason for those initials, W.C. It was the way to go in order to have his music published.
This first publishing venture would launch Handy into national prominence, though not in the way he might have hoped. He was working with a distributor named Theron Bennett.
So he brought it to New York, and he told me that it was not selling. The truth is that I paid for 1,000 copies of the first edition of Memphis Blues instrumental, but later found that 2,000 were printed. It may be the reason my 1,000 wasn't selling was that he was selling his 1,000.
Bennett convinced Handy that his sheet music wasn't selling. Handy agreed to part with his copyright for $100. Actually, the Memphis Blues sold well and would become Handy's first national hit.
I sold my rights to the Memphis Blues. I found in my that things work for good regardless. Theron C. Bennett. He went to New York, had George Norton to write a song about Handy and his band.
Folks have just been down to Memphis town. That's where the people smile on you all the while.
Hospitality, fame was good to me. I couldn't spend a dime. I had the grandest time. I went out a dancing with a Tennessee deal. They had a fella there named Handy with a band you should hear. While the white folks gently sway, all those doggies play real harmony. I never would forget the tune that Handy called the Memphis Blues. All those.
That song went all around the world and made me a reputation, even if I didn't get any particular money out of it. But after I had sold it, minstrel bands used to come to Memphis and they'd use it on the stage. I could see the bigness of it.
W.C. Handy's great-granddaughter, Edwina Handy DaCosta.
Memphis Blues was his first publication. The tune became so popular that great-grandfather had to hire 3 bands to tour throughout the country. Today we hear a lot of controversy whether Memphis Blues was actually the first blues published, because there's a composition called Dallas Blues that has a few days earlier copyright date. But as I mentioned, great-grandfather had to hire 3 bands to travel throughout the country. And this man who wrote Dallas Blues has never been heard of again, and that Memphis Blues still holds that title of the first blues published.
Handy used an unusual effect in Memphis Blues, the blue note, slurring between major and minor. And from the rural blues, he took a break, or a gap that allowed for improvisation by the singer or musicians. This blues break, along with the 12 or 16 bar framework, made Handy's compositions distinctive and familiar. They were a change from the marches, ragtime, and classical music that dominated popular music sales. From 1923, W.C. Handy's orchestra, the Memphis Blues. Although Handy was paid as the recording artist on that track, he had surrendered the rights to the composition in 1912. Now he needed to write another hit. To get out of earshot of his 4 rambunctious children, he rented a room on Beale Avenue, as it was called then. When he sat down to work in 1914, What came back to him was a strain he'd heard in St. Louis almost two decades earlier.
He had heard a bereft woman walking the streets and moaning.
He's got a heart like a cast in the sea.
That man's got a heart like a rock cast in the sea. So he was supposedly storing that up for decades in his memory bank.
Musicologist Elliot Hurwitt.
The St. Louis Blues is certainly Handy's greatest composition and most interesting composition in a lot of different ways. The three-strain structure is really brilliant because it has so much variety in it. I mean, it opens with a kind of slow, mournful-sounding intro.
That evening sun go down. I hate to see
that evening sun go down, which in itself was revolutionary at the time because it really was the first kind of authentic sounding or maybe rural sounding blues strain to introduce a published commercial blues. And then the second strain that Handy put into St. Louis blues is the tango strain. St. Louis woman, bum, bum, with her diamond ring. They would play it at a fast tempo, and it sounded happy, and people would dance to it. America was absolutely dance mad. So, you know, you put all these elements together, it's really brilliant. The funny thing about the piece is that it didn't take off like a rocket. The song was old before it became the biggest hit in the world.
During these years, Handy was the toast of Memphis. Richard Rachelson.
This is big time. Here he was hanging out on Beale Street. He was directing an orchestra, teaching music, and he had his publishing company. And so he was doing pretty well.
But when he tried to write a song about his beloved Beale Avenue, his love for its high role in life distracted him from completing his tribute.
I liked the life of Beale Street. It was exciting. So much so that I was 2 years trying to write a number called Beale Street, but I couldn't find words for it. One night, after leaving my office, I passed by Pee Wee's saloon. Next to it was a barber shop. This barber shop was open, say, about 2 o'clock in the morning. I said, "Come on, let's go home." He says, "I haven't closed up because ain't nobody got killed yet." And I struck myself and said, "That's it. It's the Beale Street Blues."
You'll see pretty browns in beautiful gowns. You'll see tailor-mades and hand-me-downs. You'll meet honest men, pickpocket skilled. You'll find that business never closes till somebody gets killed.
Beale Street Blues, published in 1917, became a standard. And Beale Avenue became a street. Handy's band recorded St. Louis Blues in 1922, and others soon followed.
The song very slowly built in popularity. It was being performed by great vaudeville blues singers like Bessie Smith and Ethel Waters around 1916, but nobody recorded it.
The high life in Memphis might have had special appeal to a nation watching ominous events in Europe approach its shores. When American soldiers entered World War I, Handy's music went with them. It was carried by James Reese Europe's Hellfighters, a legendary black band which played for the troops. And the song the troops wanted to hear was the St. Louis Blues.
The first recordings were instrumental.
Elliot Hurwitt.
Eventually, a couple of the white pop or vaudeville singers picked it up around 1920.
I hate to see
tango down.
There was a girl by the name of Marion Harris. She's from Kentucky. And she could sing my music, Simpler Blues. And there's something that she put in that music. But I believe it's that Southern contact and acquaintance with Negro life that made her singing a little bit different.
Feeling tomorrow like I feel today. I'll pack my trunk and make my getaway.
After 9 years, Handy had become about as big a success as a black man could be in Memphis. By 1918, he was ready to strike out for New York. Musically, his timing could not have been better. With the St. Louis Blues, W.C. Handy created the engine that drove his blues to worldwide popularity and still powers the Handy Brothers Music Company today. W.C. Handy's granddaughter, Minnie Handy Hansen, and great-granddaughter, Edwina Handy DaCosta.
The company was originally founded in Memphis, Tennessee, known as Pace and Handy Music. My grandfather was on a trip to New York to do a recording for RCA Victor.
After the visit to New York, he knew as a music publisher that this was where Pace and Handy should be. He hit town as the composer of St. Louis Blues and Memphis Blues with a brand new hit called A Good Man Is Hard to Find.
In 1918, W.C. Handy moved to New York City, installing Pace Handy Publishing in swanky offices on Broadway, and his family in an even swankier house on Harlem's Stryver's Row. Handy loved Harlem. He called it big old, good-looking, easy-going, proud-walking Harlem. Things were good. St. Louis blues was growing even more popular. Beale Street Blues was being recorded, and even the Memphis Blues, on which he'd sold the copyright, was selling in his own arrangements. The money poured in.
He was a businessman, a musician, composer, entertainer, philosopher, lyricist. I mean, he was a modern man in every sense of the word.
W.C. Handy's grandson, Dr. Carlos Handy.
You do all this at a time in American history where lynchings were rampant. Certainly, if you go back 100+ years, for a black man to have that kind of chutzpah, to have that kind of vision, that kind of professionalism, that kind of artistry.
But then the money began to pour back out. The F.W. Woolworth Company, one of Handy's biggest customers, took out their sheet music counters. Some recording companies went out of business owing Handy money. Others paid with promissory notes, then went bankrupt. Handy's longtime partner, Harry Pace, withdrew from the business and took key employees with him. Under the strain, Handy's health suffered. For a while, he even lost his eyesight. He took to asking his children to read to him from the Book of Job. Once again, Handy was broke. But once again, his compelling composition would save him.
Once people start really running with the ball in the 1920s, St. Louis Blues never stops being on the charts. There's always a new recording or published arrangement that people are spending money on, and it becomes by far the biggest hit written by an African American in this country between 1900 and 1950 or 60, and is recorded by everyone.
All them old St. Louis blues.
There are country western guys.
Listen, all you rounders. You better leave my good gal alone.
Guy Lombardo does it and has a big hit with it. And all of the jazz and blues people do it. People like Glenn Miller, Fats Waller, Louis Armstrong, Cab Calloway.
Again, jazz scholar Dan Morgenstern.
Statistically, in the 78 era, it was definitely the most recorded tune when it comes to different versions. It was recorded in Japan, it was recorded in India, it was recorded on the xylophone, on the harmonica, on the juice harp, was recorded by large orchestras, by individual soloists, with vocals, without vocals. Wonderful recording by Duke Ellington's band with Bing Crosby doing the vocal, and Bing scats his butt off.
The St. Louis Blues became one of the most recorded songs ever, and Bessie Smith's 1925 version with Louis Armstrong passed into legend as one of the greatest blues performances of all time.
In 1915, my race held an exhibition at the Coliseum in Chicago called the Lincoln Jubilee. I was invited to write a number for a march, Hail to the Spirit of Freedom.
Handy's popularity as a blues composer ironically meant that his other music, sacred works in particular, was not taken seriously.
And I've written a lot of sacred music. My own people don't use it because I wrote the blues, you see.
It was thy love that brought us here to suffer.
He was very proud of all the music that he had done, but he said, gee, people only want to talk about St. Louis blues and a few other blues.
Producer George Avakian interviewed W.C. Handy in 1956.
He thought that the researched work that he had done in making arrangements of folk melodies was extremely important, but it was glossed over by everybody. He also resented the fact that unless music had a kind of a classical quality, it was looked down upon.
There was a certain attitude that many of them had taken to the blues. In other words, if I'd written an imitation of some European opera, they'd have given me credit for it.
Handy's blues were phenomenally popular, but he still strove to secure respect for himself and for other African-American composers.
Have you heard it? Have you heard it? That you're not afraid.
When Mamie Smith made her records, I went over to Chicago, and it was interesting to see the people standing out in the streets, on the sidewalks, listening to this Negro voice on records. They didn't know who she was, but there was something in that voice they appreciated and would spend their money for to get that Negro voice, the pride of race.
The one thing I remember most of all about watching Mr. Handy when he was talking in his living room was the moment when he used the words, pride of race. He said it in a deliberate way. You can hear it. His voice even has a slight tremble. I saw the tears started to come out of the corner of his eyes as he said it. That meant a great deal to him.
By the mid-30s, Handy's eyesight was nearly gone, but he dedicated himself to educating young people about the origins of American music. He was especially eager to instruct school children in the music of the black race and to encourage them to follow their own musical leanings.
Swang low, sweet chariot.
In 1937, he revisited his old hometown of Florence, Alabama, where his words and music changed the life of a six-year-old boy named Willie Ruff. Years later in his autobiography, A Call to Assembly, Willie Ruff remembered Handy's words. "It is from the spiritual," he said, "that all else in our musical story in America took root." He demonstrated Go Down Moses and Swing Low Sweet Chariot on his trumpet and showed those qualities that our sacred music shares with the blues and jazz. His musical examples were so clear and easy to follow, and his words were so strong that I knew I was on the receiving end of a precious gift.
Handy's influence on American popular music is really incalculable. I think the entire course of American music would have been radically different if the Memphis Blues had not appeared in 1912, if St. Louis Blues had not appeared in 1914, and along with it, the Yellow Dog Blues, Joe Turner Blues, and several other very important Handy popular music compositions in that era.
Once again, Elliot Hurwitz.
Those songs really kind of opened the door for the integration of Southern blues culture and African-American culture into the mainstream far earlier than they could have done. It all starts with Handy.
W.C. Handy did not live long enough to see himself portrayed by Nat King Cole in the 1958 film St. Louis Blues. It also featured the sinuous Eartha Kitt and the phenomenal Pearl Bailey.
If Beale Street could talk, if Beale Street could talk,
married men would have to take their beds and walk.
Except one or two who never drink booze,
and the blind man on the corner who sings the Beale Street Blues. I'd rather be
once again, Edwina Handy DaCosta.
I think by the age of 11, noticing that great-grandfather's name was in the encyclopedia, that made us know that this man was very special.
It's gonna take the sergeant far to make me go.
After years of working to get his music taken seriously, Handy did hear St. Louis Blues played by one of the world's greatest orchestras. It's ironic that this triumph came indirectly as a part of a tribute to his friend Louis Armstrong.
On the night of July 14th, 1956, another of Louis' dreams came true. Leonard Bernstein conducted the Stadium Symphony, made up of 88 members of the New York Philharmonic. Among the 25,000 in the audience was W.C. Handy, 83 and blind.
And Handy is in the audience, sitting near the front.
Again, jazz scholar Dan Morgenstern.
He was sightless, and he's wearing a beautiful white suit and a Panama hat. And as this version of the St. Louis Blues comes to a climax, playing beautifully over this the mass strings. Handy feels the music and tears start rolling down his cheek. He takes his hat off, and on top of his head is a folded handkerchief, and he unfolds it and dabs his eyes.
W.C. Handy died in 1958. He passed his great legacy as a composer and collector of songs from the 19th century into the 20th. He brought the blues to the world. Now, the Handy Brothers Music Company carries them into the 21st century.
In great-grandfather's autobiography, he mentions when he severs the partnership with Harry Pace, that there he sat with his entire family.
W.C. Handy's great-granddaughter, Edwina Handy DaCosta.
He decided he was just leaving his business to his children, his grandchildren, and his grandchildren's children.
W.C. Handy's granddaughter, Minnie Handy Hansen,
We now license for movies, TV, radio, videos, book quotes, all the different films. Handy Brothers has always been on Broadway, and we've been here for like 88 years.
W.C. Handy's lifelong efforts to win respect for the music of Black Americans live on as well. Willie Ruff, who first heard Handy as a schoolboy, grew up to be one half of the noted jazz group, the Mitchell Ruff Duo, and a professor at Yale. In the 1980s, he found himself sitting in an airport on his way to Alabama and struck up a conversation about W.C. Handy with local musicologist Dr. David Musselman.
He really felt like the community should have something to commemorate Mr. Handy's being born here and the love Mr. Handy had for the Shoals area.
That something would be the W.C. Handy Music Festival. Each July, it brings musicians from all over to Florence, Alabama for a week of concerts, performances, and special events. For the performers, Handy remains an inspiration.
What Handy did, he put it together, and I think his recognition as the father of the blues is well put. Handy was the man. He was the father of the blues.
W.C. Handy's Blues was produced by Artemis Media Project with Murray Street Productions, executive producers Kathy Farnell and Steve Rath. Associate producer and post-production by Simon Rentner. We had additional assistance from Dale Short, Jackie Gales-Webb, and Matthew D. Payne. Support for this program comes from this station and Public Radio International stations nationwide, and is made possible in part by the PRI Program Fund. Contributors include the Ford Foundation and the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. This project is supported in part by an award from the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes that a great nation deserves great art, and by grants from the Alabama State Council on the Arts and the Alabama Bureau of Tourism and Travel. W.C. Handy's Blues is part of the Year of Alabama Arts. Our thanks to the interviewees who gave us their time, particularly the Handy family. Dr. Carlos Handy, Dole E. Hansen, Minnie Handy Hansen, Edwina Handy DaCosta, as well as producer George Avakian, Dr. Elliot Hurwit, Ellis Marsalis, Wynton Marsalis, Dan Morgenstern, Dr. David Musselman, and Dr. Richard Rachelson. Thanks also to Jazz at Lincoln Center's Education Department and Jazz for Young People, to George Avakian for his interview with W.C. Handy, and to DRG Records for material from the Handy Monologues on the Father of the Blues CD. Father of the Blues, W.C. Handy's autobiography, is widely available in bookstores, and the CD with Handy Monologues and songs is available through Handy Brothers Music Company in New York. Additional support came from Rounder Records, Document Records, and the W.C. Handy Festival in Florence, Alabama. Thanks also to the Institute for Jazz Studies at Rutgers University, Huntsville, Alabama City Schools, and Keith Ward. Find more about W.C. Handy at wchandysblues.org. I'm Izai Maria Barnwell. This is PRI, Public Radio International.